Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy, James Lopez, representing for the dopest Fatherhood podcast out there, the Fatherhood is Lit podcast. By now, most of you guys already know that I love hip hop. I breathe it. I live it. I mean, I'm honored to be part of the culture every single day. So today I have somebody that's doing really, really big things in hip hop. What's good, Rob Markman?
Hey, man. What's good, man? I'm glad we finally got to do this. I know we've been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah, man. But you're a busy dude, bro. You've been running around, man.
Yeah, you know.
You've been grinding.
I get into trouble. Like, if I got too much free time, man, it's just, you know. Free time is not a good thing for me, so I like to keep my schedule packed and just being active, you know?
That's crazy. That's crazy. Well, you used to be the head of artist relations at Genius, right? Congrats on being promoted to vice president of content strategy, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be up in the ranks pretty soon. You know how to build relationships because of all of that, but what I really want to know how you make your presence felt as a pops.
Yeah,
is that cool, man? Can we focus on that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love seeing some of the things that you do. Genius is dope, man. I was actually at Genius before it kind of popped. The early days when it was like four co-founders.
Right.
To see it grow, man. When I saw them hire you, it was like, all right, they're moving.
So it was a good time in my career. I had accomplished a lot being at XXL before that and MTV. And when Genius came and we just started talking, I just saw the future. Like, I seen where we could take it, and I seen what we could do, and I saw the potential, and we worked at it together. So I was glad to join the team, and you know, and one of the things too, when I kind of look at my career, like, because I watched my dad work hard. Mm-hmm. My father was a hard worker, and you know, I remember when I was a kid, he used to have two jobs. He used to have a day job, and then he had a night job. And, you know, he would leave for his night job around 8 or 9 o'clock, like, you know, a little bit after dinner. And then he would get back early in the morning and then still take me and my brother to the school bus and then go to his day job. My father was always present. I didn't realize that he actually worked the night job. Like, it took me a while to realize that because he was always around.
And, you know, and that's tough because some people can't do it with one job, right?
Nah,
he's sneaking in that time anyway.
Yeah, it was tough. Like, and he was there every morning to walk me and my brother to the school bus, and then when we come home from after school, he'd be there too. And sometimes, like, he'll take us maybe after school before dinner to play basketball or something like that, and then we go back home, have dinner, he'd do whatever he had to do, and then he'd go back out to work. But he was always present. So I always looked at my father, you know, just as somebody successful and somebody who did what he had to do to hold down the family, and somebody who inspired me, just inspired the work ethic in me. So when I look at my kids and I look at my career, you know, I feel proud that my kids could actually see my career. Like, it's a little more front facing.
Yeah.
You know, like, their friends use Genius. You know what I'm
which
saying?
Is insane. It's insane. Like, which is crazy, bro.
It was funny, in my son's music class, they studied Genius. They were studying a song, and they studied Genius, and they actually studied an interview that I did. But not every interview I do is on camera.
Yeah.
So we had did an interview with the band, and I was off camera for it. So you couldn't tell that I was the one doing the interview, but I absolutely was. And my son, and they were studying it in his class. And I asked my son, I was like, yo, did you tell your teacher, you know, your pops works for Genius? I did that interview that y'all studying. And he said, no, dad, no. He was like real embarrassed. But and it was cool. Like, it was definitely cool.
That's funny. Yo, that's funny as hell though, man. Cause I get that from my kids.
I get it too. Yeah. And so I didn't want to embarrass him. I didn't want to say nothing to the teacher or that, like that. I just let him rock the way he wanted to rock. But what I hope seeped in and what I think seeped in is that, like, damn, you know, my dad is doing things that kind of are far reaching, you know what I mean? And that I'm doing things that affect the culture and, you know, particularly in music. And, you know, hopefully he can see that in himself, that because I'm he sees me all the time. I'm super present in my kid's life. So hopefully he sees when he starts making career decisions that he sees the same potential in himself, that it's not far fetched.
Yeah. You're giving them the right to dream, right? You're giving them. You know what I mean? And that's what we're supposed to do. Like we build that foundation, and then we tell them, yo, go add another layer to it. You know what I mean?
Nah, like, and you know, I had seen, and I was blessed to have my father in my life, like a lot. Some of my friends, a good number of my friends, yeah, I had a lot of friends who just didn't have their father around. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? I had a best friend. As he's still my best friend, he's my brother. When we were kids, they had told him that his father died. Mm-hmm. His father drowned, they told him, in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And was that true?
No. And we found out, like, and I was with him when he found, I was with him the day his father popped up. We were playing on the block, and his father comes out of nowhere, and
what?
It was just this moment, and he found out that he was, like, lied to. You know, his father just wasn't present, and now his father's building relationships. So, I know what that's like secondhand.
Yeah.
As especially as a young man, not having a father in your life. I have another very close friend of mine that his dad was present, but his dad was a big time drug dealer, like big time. Like, and I watched his dad go on the run, mm-hmm. and leave my man, you know, listen, told my man, listen, you know, you 15, 16 now, you got to find your own way. I'm out of here. And he left the country. You know what I'm saying? And so I know what these relationships are and how important it is. So I always cherish, I always appreciated my father for being present. And I always looked up to him because he showed me that, you know, what it's like to be successful and be present and to be hardworking. And, you know, and the two friends that I mentioned to you, we're still very close now, but all three of us. And they have kids now too. Like I have kids, and they're amazing fathers. So
yeah, makes y'all tighter.
Yeah, I love that. Their negative experiences with their dads led them to want to be better fathers than their fathers was to them. And you know that I hope I could be like half the dad that my father was.
Oh no, I think you know, I always tell people, like, once you say something like that, right? Like once you put that out there, it shows that you care. And because you care, you will be better than that. You know what I mean? Because you're already thinking about it. You're already thinking about, yo, how can I be at least half as good as he was? You probably surpassed that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're probably way past that.
I mean, I hope so. We still got more work to do. Like right now, I'm realizing my biggest job in this moment with my kids and with my sons is to teach them about the world. We see what's going on with the news.
Yeah.
We see what's going on. You know, I think we're living in historic times. You know,
it's insane.
I think the Pandemic Act, you know, was one. And that's going to be written in the history books. And you know, we got to really watch how our politicians handle it, how our government handle it, how people's lives are put in danger. And then right off of that, when we're dealing with that, and that's something we never dealt with in our lifetime, you know, we see the recurring theme of you know, Black people being killed by police and at the hands of white supremacy. And, you know, I think we're going to see laws change. We're going to see reform. I question whether or not it's going to be enough. Like, I question whether or not we're going to see cosmetic change or real spiritual change in this country. And you know, I think it's important to keep fighting and keep pushing for justice. But it's also important for me as a father to have these conversations with my kids because, you know, I saw certain things growing up. I knew what it was growing up. And, you know,
it was different. It was different. You were born and raised out here where in BK?
Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn. So.
All right, so I'm from the Bronx, and you were born in the 80s, right?
80s. Yeah, I'm from the crack era, man.
Like, me too, man. I'm a 1980s baby. I'm a 1980, like 1980 period. You know what I mean? And I tell people all the time that crack era was no joke. Like you saw things that adults should never see,
right?
And we could only be 6 years old, 7 years old,
right? Right,
and trying to relay that message to our kids, yo. You and I live in Staten Island, man. It's a totally different world than what we did.
Right, and I'm still trying to keep him educated because what it was, you know, I lived that life. Actually, when my first son was born, I lived on the same block that I grew up on, and there were shootouts every other night. It was hot that summer when my son was born. And we moved out here to Staten Island because I just wanted him. I didn't want him to grow up waking up out of his sleep from a shootout or what. You know, exactly. That was like, so I wanted to give him something different. And the quest for that, there's a lot of things he hasn't experienced, thankfully. But, you know, he sees what's going on. Both of them see what's going on in the news. They see what's going on with the police and they see the injustice. Mm-hmm. And the lesson and the talk that I've been having with them is this has been around. This is systemic. And you know, that's the part that I'm teaching them that might be hard for them to understand because they just know what they see in front of them. And, you know, we start talking about how, you know, the prison system is an extension of slavery. You know what I'm saying?
But that's hard for kids, right? And before we continue with that conversation, like we both live on an island where the law is big. There's nothing but police officers out here and like civil service workers and stuff like that, right? Like, how hard is it to explain to your child, especially your oldest one, like my son is 13, how hard is it to explain to them, yo, not all cops are bad, but at the same time, we're pushing the narrative of we want justice, right? Like, like finding that balance, it's hard. Like, it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, you know, it comes through a series of teaching. And I mean, the conversation that I have is like, I mean, it's true. It is absolutely true. Not all cops are bad. Mm-hmm. I know that there's some good ones out there. I believe it. You know what I'm saying? Because I believe in people.
Yeah, that's a fact.
What was bad and what has to be dismantled is the system of police and how we police, because it allows for, and that's when, you know, to me, at least what it means when we talk about systemic racism, the system of policing, what that was built upon allows for these injustices to take place and go unchecked, mm-hmm. and for cops to get away with it. You know what I mean? And that's the problem. That's what's bad.
Yeah.
And then when you fix the system, and then we can figure out which ones are the good ones and which ones are the bad ones, and we could weed out the bad ones.
Mm-hmm. All with due justice, process and all that.
Due process and all of that, and get back, but. Inherently, the system of police that we have is just, you know, it stems, you know, and it starts going from the conversation of, look, this country was built on injustice. Mm-hmm. You know, the natives were robbed of their land and killed off and pushed off to reservation.
Yeah, it's all like prior experiences.
Yeah, and Africans were brought over and enslaved and robbed and raped of their culture and the free labor that they provided, that they were forced to provide, built up generational wealth. And then when you free slaves, you'd be like, okay, that doesn't mean that the country is corrected, because you still have a race of people. You still have white people and white families who were able to build generational wealth on black labor. Things are still not equal. You know what I'm saying? And so you go on with this illusion of equality and, you know, it doesn't really exist in the way that, unfortunately, that they tell our kids in school, in the history books. You know,
and that's what we got to come in and remember that schools aren't like the first and last stop for education. You know what I mean? Whereas, like now, as parents, using our previous experiences, like, you know, we grew up in the hood, we grew up during the crack era. Like, you know, these things aren't different to us. You know what I mean? But to our kids, now that we got them, like, you know, a little bit in a blessed life where they actually get to enjoy their childhood a little bit more, it's hard to like make them understand that, right? Where it's like you have to have those conversations over and over and over again, no matter how tiring it is, because you got to relay that message.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And so that's where we at now. We have long talks at the dinner table and we sit down and we watch TV together. And actually this weekend, I want to watch the 13th documentary with my kids that Ava DuVernay did, because I think that I haven't seen it yet, but I heard that like that'll really kind of illustrate what we're talking about, you know, especially with the prison system and the inequalities there and you know, and that police, it's all connected. So, you know, I just want to continue to have these conversations with my kids and give them perspective and give them game so that when their kids are learning about it in school and in the history books, because this time we'll go down in history, my kids will have real life perspective.
Yeah, you got to give on,
because we see a lot of this stuff gets written out of the books.
Nah, you got to give them that exposure. Like I had, you know, I had somebody, like I did the protest out here in Staten Island with my son, with my oldest. And then, my family met me there or whatever. And somebody was like, man, like, you know, why would you take your son there? And my answer was, yo, I had to expose it to him. Like I could talk to him about it, but him actually being there, yo, it was completely different. Like the protesters did all the talking for me. I just had to step in when things were a little like fuzzy. You know what I mean? Right, but just dumb chanting in solidarity, he got everything he needed. It's like, yo, you the history book now. You know what I mean? Right. Like now when people throw things at you, you could actually say, nah, I seen that. Like y'all wrong here or y'all right there. You know what I mean? But yo, but I want to flip it. I want to flip it to something positive now. How about when you first took your oldest to his first concert, bro? I remember I saw that on Instagram years ago, I'm going to say, man, because I've been following you for a minute. And you had posted, I think it was your oldest son, and you took him to like his first rap concert.
Yeah, well, my oldest son's first concert, I mean, he was probably 2 or 3 years old. Was actually a Wiz Khalifa concert.
What? Wait, how old was he?
He was maybe 2 or 3.
Yo, how the hell did you pull that off?
It was in a park. It was like in a public park. It was like Wiz Khalifa was opening for Girl Talk, I think, or maybe it was the other way around. But Girl Talk and Wiz were performing together. This is even before Cushion OJ. This, I think Wiz was like performing Flight School.
This is when he was banging hard with like Currency, right? Like when they were both popping
this
out.
This was a little bit even before Currency.
Okay.
Like, this is early Wiz. I've been following Wiz for a long time, been a fan of Wiz for a long time. And I took him there, and I remember having him on my shoulders, and I was the only one with a kid there.
You know what I'm saying? That's Wiz, man.
Yeah, I was the only one with a kid there. And
that's dope, man.
And that was, I don't know if he remembers it, but that was his first. And he was rapping along, man, because he knew, because I would play some of the songs in the car, and everybody was like amazed around me, because it was like young college kids at the time. And they were like, yo, your size, you know the words, that's crazy. And then, yeah, you know, so that was it. And it was funny because when Wiz had his son, when Wiz's son was born, Bash, before they even announced that they were pregnant, him and Amber, Wiz had tweeted me right there on Twitter for everybody to see. I didn't know what he was talking about. Uh-huh. But he just tweeted me randomly. And he was like, yo, one day our kids will play together. And I was just like, he probably high or something. I don't know what he's talking about. I didn't realize that he was expecting.
Yeah.
And then when he actually announced it, I started doing the math, and I hit him. I said, oh, that's what that tweet meant? He was like, yeah, man. Like, I thought you was going to get it. You know what I'm saying?
That's what's up. You built a nice relationship there, man.
Yeah, but yeah, the first concert he went to was Wiz. But I think the one that you're talking about, when I put it on Instagram, me and him went to the Drake concert, Drake and Future, when they did the Summer 16 tour.
That had to be crazy.
Yeah, that was dope.
How did y'all pull that off? Like, were y'all regular general admittance? Or
we
pulled some cards? Like, what's good?
Nah, we just had some good seats. That's all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But we just had some good seats. You know, but we go to concerts like that. And we went to the Summer 16 concert. I took my youngest. He's a big Kendrick Lamar fan. I took him when they did the TDE World Tour. We went to that. We went to the Drake Scorpion tour together.
You take them to a few. So how do you present that to wifey? Like, you just say, yo, we're going to the concert, and she just be like, yo, we good?
Yeah, she ain't tripping.
Yeah, because I think for me, like, I've been worried. Like, I want to take my oldest to like an official concert. Like, we've done festivals. Like, we did I forgot the name of it. The Global Citizen one, I think it was. It was with Cardi B a couple years ago. We did that, but that's, you know, it has a lot of pop music in it. I want to take him to a real hip hop joint, but my wife is like, yo, if Bun B come out here, you can't take your son to that and chill backstage. And it's like, why not? You know what I mean? So it's like, how do you pull that off, man?
Hold on, my bad.
Because I'm sure you've used some hookups too. Like, I'm sure you've been backstage with your son a couple times too.
Not really. With my kids.
Get out of here.
They don't really trip off of it.
How did you manage that, bro? How did you keep them humble like that then?
I don't know. They just don't. I think because they grew up around it ever since they was little, but they don't really trip off of meeting celebrities and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I think maybe because of my proximity to it, I've always been like close to it. They just don't trip off a celebrity. Like, they enjoy the music, but they're not really tripping off celebrity. You know, I remember one, I've taken them to other concerts too, non-hip hop concerts. I remember there used to be this band called Big Time Rush. Took them to that concert. Yep. I remember one time there used to be this show, I think on the Disney Channel called Jesse. And the actress Debbie Ryan used to play Jesse. And one day she came to my job and, you know, I took my kids to meet her and they took a picture with her because they used to watch that show all the time. But they weren't really tripping. They were like cool on all of that. A lot of times I'd be like, yo, so-and-so's coming to my job. You guys want to come and meet so-and-so? And they'd be like, nah, we cool.
What? That's crazy. Yeah. Well, that's because it's normal to them. Like,
yeah, I guess it's normal to them. And then and you know, and they saw me perform too. I took them to see me perform. I performed at Barclays Center with Logic.
And that, you know, how did that feel, bro?
Yeah, nah, that was crazy. That meant a lot for me. I mean, one, just to actually be performing there, but to have my kids in the stands.
And were they in the stands or were they backstage chilling, bro?
Nah, they was in the stands.
What? You didn't put them backstage? You wanted them to watch, actually.
Yeah, I did want them to see. And it wasn't like I had that many backstage passes myself. Like, you know, I was like a guest of Logic, so I didn't want to push the issue. So I was like, man, they just watch from the stands.
Plus, I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead. I was just going to say, did you point at them? Like, yo, y'all better be Instagramming this, man. Nah, like, this is Snapchat.
They definitely caught some video of it, though. But yeah, nah, it was cool, man. Like, and I remember coming home that night. Well, it was funny because we were going to meet. I left from the backstage and they went out the regular entrance. And, you know, I was just like, all right, we're going to meet on this corner. And when I was walking to them, like, so many fans wanted to take pictures. And that kind of blew them away that they saw how, like, fans were reacting to me and how people wanted to take pictures and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And when we got home that night, my oldest son, he was like, damn. He was like, yo, when did you write your first rap? And I was like, oh, I was 12 years old. And at the time, he was 12. And he was like, so you've been dreaming of doing that ever since you was 12? And I was like, absolutely. And then he said, okay, so I'm 12 now. So whatever I dream of right now, you think I could be it when I grow up? And I'm like, absolutely. And that meant the most to me. For him to see it, let him know that whatever he was dreaming or whatever he dreams now, even if it seems far-fetched, like, it's possible.
Yeah.
So that was the most important lesson for me to teach.
That's crazy, though, because it's like you could have, like, an experience, like, performing, you know, with Logic. But what really matters the most is hearing your son saying, yo, like, I could dream too then. Like, I could do my thing. And I guess the better part about that is, like, you being so involved with the family and the raising of your child is, like, now I can actually help you achieve some of those dreams, right? Where, like, when I was growing up, I think my dad used to tell me, yo, you can do whatever you want. But I'm pretty sure I presented him some things that he was like, nah, you can't do that.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And here it's like, nah, we could, like, for me, I feel like I could help them with anything right now. Like, I just want them to be happy.
Yeah, nah, that's how I feel. I have the resources to help them with anything. But my pops was supportive, too. My pops was really supportive. My pops, you know, I wrote my first rap when I was 12. By the time I was in high school, I was, like, going to open mics, like the New Eureka Poet Cafe, you know, and stuff like that. And my pops used to come out to watch me perform, like, you know what I'm saying, and cheer me on, you know, when I signed up for an open mic or something like that. So he was super supportive. Like, my pops never told me no. He never told me that. He stressed going to school. It wasn't like I could quit school and just do music. But, you know, he was around and he saw me, you know, like, just on the come up and stuff like that. So they was always supportive. Like, and, you know, my uncle on my mother's side is a famous jazz musician, mm-hmm. like revered, like, Latin jazz musician by the name of Willie Bobo. And he played with everybody from Tito Puente. He played with Miles Davis. He played with Dizzy Gillespie. Like, his credits is insane, and he had his own solo records. So, you know, I think they always understood, like, you know, I think music kind of runs in the family, and they always understood. They didn't, like, shun away when I said I wanted to do music.
Yeah, they already grew up with it. So yeah. You're good. So now you're always hustling, bro. Like you're all over the place. Like you climbing the ranks, right? Like how do you make sure that you find time that's meaningful for your kids?
I don't know. It's hard. It's a struggle sometimes. I mean, I just try to be present when I can. Like there's sometimes, you know, I'm working. I'm not home to have dinner with them. Mm-hmm. I usually try to get home at least, like, even if I have somewhere to be during the night, let's say after work, I have the studio session. I usually stop home first, at least so I could just check in on them. Yo, how was your day? How was school? Whatever. But, you know, it's tough, you know, and then times when I'm traveling, it gets real tough. But what I do is when I'm home, I'm home. When I'm with them, I'm with them. And I try to give them that time and do quality things when we have the time together, even if it's not every day. You know, during the quarantine, the stay at home order, it's been a blessing. We've been able to have like dinner together every night. And, you know, just because of the pandemic forced us together, you know, we've been really making the most out of it. So it's been cool, like seeing them every day and being that present.
What y'all been doing for some air, you know?
Just walks in the park mostly. We stay home a lot. You know, their grandfather had passed away.
Oh, condolences, man.
Yeah, due to COVID. He had COVID, and so he passed away. So it kind of hit us close as a family, and we've just been cautious. So for the most part, we're staying inside. But, you know, we'll go out for walks in the park.
Yeah. So now with back to the music side, like, is there times when your kids actually put you on to some music? Or do you think you're still holding that crown?
Nah, I still hold the crown. Like we might discover something at the same time, but I still kind of hold the crown. Like, but it's funny, like, oh, we'll discover stuff at the same time, like Lil Nas X or something like that. But, you know, it's just part of my job. I have to be so early on stuff. So, you know, yeah, they aren't like discovering music until it's like absolutely present. But, you know, we talk about stuff. And they have their own taste in music, too. Both of my kids have, like, old souls. Mm-hmm. So they'll go into different phases when they're into rap. You know, they don't like a lot of the new stuff. It's funny. My youngest, you know, he likes Kendrick. He likes Drake. He likes Travis. But he listens to a lot of old stuff, too. My oldest son, he has a playlist with, like, Biggie and stuff like that. And I don't force any of that stuff on him. But they just tend to go for the old stuff. And then even non-hip-hop, like my oldest son listens to Elton John and all types of music, you know what I mean?
So y'all don't really be beefing over the Bluetooth in the car then, right? Like whoever got a playlist, y'all just let it rock?
Yeah, usually I let it rock. I still like, it's my car, so I'm listening to what I want. But
you still hold it down?
Yeah, I let them listen to what they want to, but they both got phones now, so nine out of 10 times they'll have their headphones on. And even if I offer them, I'm like, yo, we could play this through the speaker. They're like, nah, we just gonna keep our headphones on. They're pretty chill.
Yeah, they like their privacy sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you're a writer yourself. Like when you decided to write your album, I remember seeing you tweeting about it and saying that you wanted to focus like on the lyrics and the messaging, right? Yeah. How do you teach your kids that in hip hop, sometimes the messages that are thrown out there in our favorite tracks aren't really reality? Like, has that been, how have you approached that now that you're a writer also?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about that. It was funny. We was having that talk the other day.
Yeah. How did that go? Like, how did it come up? Was it something that you heard that you were like, yo, dogs, y'all better not do this?
Nah, it just came up naturally. I forgot how it came up, but they have a pretty good understanding on what's like exaggerated and, you know, that it's entertainment. But I think it was just really through a series of conversations since they were little. I remember too when my son, he was probably four, and Drake had Best I Ever Had. Mm-hmm. And at 4 years old, my son, I wasn't even that genius yet, which is funny, but you know, I've always been breaking down lyrics. I've always been in the lyrics. 4 years old, he's like, hey, Dad, what does double cup love mean? Because Drake has the line, double cup love, you know, lean on. So I explained it to him at 4 years old. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So I'm like, lean is this, and it's a drug. And, you know, when people drink it, they put it in two styrofoam cups. And that's what double cup love means. And I don't know that he understood it at 4 years old, but it's like a series of those type of conversations.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. I tell people all the time. It's almost like you have to keep it real with them, right? So, is there ever a moment that you feel like it might be too real to talk about it? Because I think sometimes when I listen to music, with my oldest, it's like, yo, we could talk about anything right now. Like, you're 13 years old, we might as well. You know what I mean?
At this point, I mean, my youngest is about to be 15.
Your youngest is 15?
I'm sorry, my oldest is about to be 15 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And my youngest is 12. So, and I think between their ages and what's going on in the world, it would be, I would be doing them a disservice if I didn't have real conversation with them. I mean, even down to the, man, all kids do it. Even down to the porn conversation, you know, finding my son, he'll probably kill me. So, finding my son looking at porn or whatever, or the shit that he stumbles upon. Yeah. And having that conversation with him, like, dog, I feel you, but you also need to understand this isn't real. Mm-hmm. Like, this is an exaggerated version. This is not how men and women interact, like, for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you love a woman, this is not what it is. And getting him to understand that, because the pressure of even living up to that is just... You know, it creates false expectations of how the world really works. Music is similar. Like, it's all exaggerated for entertainment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so you got to have those conversations with them, especially the porn conversation, because I thought it was so different when we were growing up. Like, the most we get is, like, somebody older to buy you a Playboy magazine, or, you know, you sneak and watch the porn channel or the something like that.
Yeah, the fuzzy channel with the antenna.
Yeah. Now it's just so accessible, and you could really see anything on the internet. There's no, you know what I'm saying? And it's all hardcore, and it's all different fetishes and all different things. And who knows what the kids are being exposed to. So I just try to have those realistic conversations.
Yo, it's crazy you mentioned that, man. Cause the way you caught him with the porn, right? Like, for me, when I was growing up, my dad actually put porn on to talk to me about sex.
Oh, wow.
And because of that, it was actually harder for me to talk to my son about it.
Right.
It was like, how am I going to present this?
Because you wasn't willing to do that.
Yeah, I didn't want to go that far. Like, it's that one of those moments where it was like, damn, that was real, but a little bit too real, especially for the way I'm raising my son now. So it took me a long time to start having that discussion. And eventually it just came out. But the best thing that somebody told me, this guy named Paul Brunson, was that I wanted to do the conversation with him. So I was asking people, how should I start? So it meant I cared. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was like, all right, that's true. Because I know a lot of kids that never got the sex talk.
I never got it. My dad was great, man, but I never got it.
Yeah. And it's like, I didn't want to do that, man. Like, I saw a tweet where a guy tweeted that, that his son came home and he told him that sex was like that the kid had to wrap like his penis around something. And the dad was like, damn, I failed.
Right.
And it was like, shit, I don't want to feel like that, bro.
Yeah, but it's still time to correct it. You know what I mean? And they learn. And, you know, it's some things.
It's hard, you know, yo. Being a dad ain't easy, man.
Yeah. It's sometimes I look at things and I'll be like, damn, I failed. But then I also realize they're so young. It's not failure, is giving up. It's like, man, I could correct the course. I could still teach the lessons. You know what I'm saying? It's not too late. So.
Yeah, and then when in doubt, throw some hip hop on, man. You know, get you motivated, man. So, Mark, man, what's next for you guys, man? Or what's next for you, man? How do you plan to make your presence felt once this corona shit is over, bro?
Shit, I ain't never stopped, man. Thankfully, the team at Genius, we've been working really hard. We've been publishing and doing our normal videos through this. We've been doing it a little different.
Yeah, y'all ramped it up.
We've still been putting out content and stuff like that. I feel really grateful for the team and really grateful to be able to do that. And, you know, we're also working on some new things and some new avenues, products, like people will see really soon, which I'm excited about. And then personally, you know, I've been dropping music twice a month, every month this year, on the 1st and the 15th. So like, I haven't stopped. I haven't let this thing slow me down. And it's not to say that it hasn't affected me and it hasn't affected us. Like, it's heavy and it's hard some days, but you know, I was just in a good groove before this. musically and professionally. Like, I was just in a good groove. And so it, when things kind of slowed down, it was good because I already built up certain work habits that just kept me going.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, and I feel you on that, because I was already, you know, the luxury of working in tech is that I get to work from the crib. So right. I was already home and doing certain things a certain way. So the minute we had to go on lockdown, it was like, oh, now I just got to do it with, you know, with the kids around and wifey around. Like, it was an adjustment, but I already had that going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nah, definite adjustment, but it wasn't hard. And, you know, I feel for people, because some people had it harder. The transition for me wasn't as difficult. And, you know, so I just plan to keep doing what I've been doing. And, you know, I got an album coming out this year, later this year. And, you know, I wrote a comic book with Marvel. I did a comic book story back in February. And, you know, the comic book industry took a little bit of a hit. But I hope to get back to that at some time before the year is done. And, you know, I got a couple scripts and on my hard drive. And, you know, we just see where we could take it, man. But through it all, it's been a tough year, but I'm grateful for a lot of things.
Yo, that's you know, we got to talk offline, but when you do the comic book, you gotta let me know, because that's the thing I was doing here in Staten Island, where we were painting like cartoon figures or like Pokemon figures, whatever we could 3D print, and we were doing that at comic book stores. So it would be dope to do something together. But so last question, man. COVID is over. What's the first vacation you're going with your kids, man? Where are you taking them on vacation?
I don't know.
Please don't tell me Disney, bro. Please don't tell me.
Nah, it's not Disney.
I hate that place right now.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get on a flight with them.
For a minute?
For a minute. So, you know, we might just, like, drive somewhere. You know,
likewise, man. Likewise. We driving upstate, man. Like, yeah. That's our vacation.
Yeah. I'm not sure yet. I haven't thought about it yet, man. But we'll figure something out.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so how... What I'm sorry, go ahead.
Nah, I said, but I just plan during the summer to do like local things, like, you know, maybe days at the beach, you know, early in the morning, maybe when it's like less people around, and, you know, just different things where we could still be socially distanced and safe, and but like enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, I think the same thing. Even like a two day trip to like the mountains or something, you know what I mean? Like something that you usually don't do but still keep it comfortable. You know what I mean?
Facts.
You can stay at a cabin or something like that. Like, I'm not going to be that crazy dude that says I'm going to go camping the whole summer. You know, I need a camper or a cabin. I'm from New York. I can't do that. But yeah, man. But I'm like you. I'm not. No planes, man. No planes. Driving everywhere. Until next year.
Yeah, I might. You know, there might be things that I have to do for work-wise that, you know, I don't know yet. And it hasn't come up. But as far as taking the family, you know, taking the kids on flights and stuff like that, you know, I'm probably going to chill, ixnay on that.
We good. Focus on the music. So how can people contact you, man? What's the easiest way?
Just social media, probably. I'm always on social media at Raw Markman on Twitter or Instagram. Probably the easiest way is to get at me. You know, I check my DMs. It'd be a lot of them, but I check them.
Nah, you active, bro. You active. You've been active for years, man.
Yeah, so, you know, it's still kind of the best place to get me. And, you know, yeah, that's it.
For sure, for sure. Damn, Rob. Well, thanks, man. It's been a long time coming, man. I'm honored to have you here talking hip-hop, talking Right to Dream, talking about your kids, man. Like, I can't thank you enough, man. I'm truly honored.
Nah, man. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it, and I'm glad we was able to make this time.
Yeah, and I'm glad we get to represent for Staten Island, bro. Like, a lot of people in hip-hop don't know about Staten Island, and here we are, you know, two transplants making it happen. You know,
yeah, for sure, man. Staten Island, like I said, Brooklyn is always my heart. I'm from Brooklyn. That's never going to change.
Yeah.
But, man, I've been to Staten for a number of years. And, you know, it's dope out here, man. And it showed me a lot of love. So I show a lot of love back. I always get upset when people try to, like, really shit on Staten Island, man. Because,
yo, that's talent out here, bro. There's talent, and it's a, you know, it's still a beautiful life too, man.
Yeah, it's definitely talent. It's people out here, and we still New York, man. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, you know, I find a lot of people who might have moved to New York who are like transplants, and they'd be like, oh, where you live? And you'd be like, Staten Island, and they make the face. I'd be like, look, bro. I'm not living in Soho with six roommates, man. Like, this is like, you can't, like, you gotta separate from your roommates. You got to get your own place where you make a nasty face at me when I bring a Staten Island, man.
Word. And that's the thing, man. It's affordable and we got, you know, we still got some space. You know, this good, just like every other borough, man, we got our good, we got our bad, but we're still part of the city. You know what I mean?
For
we
sure.
Still
hell yeah. And, you know, even before I moved to Staten Island, when I was in Brooklyn, because there was a time when my father used to work on Staten Island. So I used to come out here with my pops and I just used to explore the island. So I, you know, even before living here, like I knew about Staten Island, but you know, again, I'm a New York City kid. So, and I used to hang out in Washington Heights in Brooklyn. I used to hang out in Queens, you know what I'm saying? In the Bronx where my cousins live. Like it was like nothing for me to travel from place to place. I always had people in every borough.
I think that's all we knew growing up, man.
Yeah.
Like growing up, I think that's something that, you know, that my dad did for me where it was like, yo, there's more than the corner stop sign. You know what I mean? Like, let me, you know, let's cross the street. And you cross the street, you end up in Staten Island. You end up in Brooklyn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nah, but we used to get around.
Now, it was beautiful, man. Like, that's why, those are the little things that I think my kids are missing now. Like, riding the train just to hit up every borough. You know what I mean? Like, now we kind of drive to every borough. And it's a blessing to do that. But, you know, you miss out on a couple things, too. You know what I mean?
Nah, for sure.
Yeah, so thank you once again, Rob, man. And, you know, anything you need, you know, you got a friend out here, man.
Neighbors. I appreciate that, man.
For sure, for sure. To the fathers out there, we, just like our kids, have the right to dream. Rob Markman just told us how he's making his presence felt. It's your turn. Fatherhood is lit.